Today is March 16th. March 26th, and we are learning Bereishis. And in Bereishis Lamed Zayin, we see Yosef has already established three reasons for his brothers to hate him. One is, his favoritism. That's a calumny brought upon him by Yaakov's treatment. But from Yaakov's defense, it's his mother that I wanted to marry. Right? All this other stuff came against my will. So, and they may know that, I don't know. But he does show certainly special favoritism. Now, the favoritism in Chazal is that Yosef gets an education. Right? Yosef gets a long-sleeved shirt that indicates he's Ben Zakunim, who shares Yaakov's considerable knowledge. The Sforno was the commentary I shared with you already that says that Yosef tried to impart that knowledge onto his brothers. Who Hayar, get it? Listen carefully. Hayar wrote, he tried to help them with the information that his father gave him. It's one thing for the oldest brother to behave that way, but the youngest? Who wants to hear information like that from a pisher? But Yosef always likes to be helpful. Remember, he went up to the butler and the baker in prison to ask them, why do you look so depressed? Good Shabbos, if you cross Paro, you're about to be dead. So of course they're depressed. They would not go up to a Hebrew and say, we need someone to interpret our dream. He went to them. He said, you guys look upset. Can I help you with something? He's always trying to be helpful. Right? He didn't have to tell Paro after interpreting the dream, let me give you some more advice. That's Yosef being Yosef. Paro just asked for an interpretation of the dream. Why did he have to add at the end, now let Paro choose someone to save food in these years of plenty? Okay. So if you can consider a typology of, let's say, an Italian immigrant family, let's say an Irish immigrant family to the United States in the 1880s, and, they're Irish, so they have a lot of kids, right? They have 11, 12 boys, right? And the youngest one shows great promise, and he gets to go to college and law school. But all the other 11 have to serve on the docks or in the mines, right? Wouldn't you think those older brothers would be so proud of their youngest sibling? And would protect him as much as possible. But that doesn't happen in our story because Yosef plays into this favoritism with Dibatam Ra'ah. Remember that? El Avihem. And when Yaakov sends him, go see it Shlom Achecha, the Shlom Hatzon. Yaakov, don't you realize you're sending this boy into the jaws of the lion? He's only 17 years old. Right? From Hebron to Shechem might not be a huge distance, but it's still a distance. Maybe he gave him the family car, I don't know. But he sends him out. I explain it homiletically. He goes, Re'e es shlomachecha, you get it? I know you're having trouble with your brothers. Go make some peace with them, huh? Okay? Yes?
Could be that Yosef wanted to do it, Maybe he's just sort of...
Well, they had it out for him as soon as they saw him, because the minute they laid eyes on him, we know he was wearing his his coat. The favoritism took on the form of the coat. The coat is just a representation of his ability to wear long sleeves because he's sitting in a nice cool room studying. The other brothers are shirtless working out in the fields. You hear it? But when they saw him from far, the thing that egged them on the most, Mr. Newmark, is
the dreams.
The dreams. Here comes that dream of dreams. They don't mince words. Let's get rid of him. They said, let's kill him right away and see and make sure that those dreams don't come true. Of course, their behavior, as it's going to pan out between Reuven and Yehuda and other brothers, is that what they're doing is exactly going to make his dreams come true. Great irony of the story. There is an ancient form of storytelling known as in modern circles as sapiential literature. I'm Homo sapien. Right? It's the struggle of man. Right? I'm just telling you what exists in those who study this genre in the ancient world. They all agree the Yosef story is the greatest story ever told in this framework. What does sapiential literature share in common from the ancient world is how to deal with adversity. Adversity will definitely come to you. How do you deal with it? It's not just turning lemons into lemonade, but how are you... going to take your thoughts. Yosef could tell his father, Daddy, you're asking me to do something a little dangerous. I know these guys really have it out for me. And I'm happy to do whatever you want, but no, Yosef does not question it. Yosef doesn't question, I'm never going to see my family again. I really don't want it to sleep with Potiphar's wife, but who knows what she could do to me if I give in, if I don't give in. So, right? Who knows what she's capable of doing? I'm a dead man if she accuses me. She might even accuse him and said, listen, if you don't sleep with me, I'm going to tell my husband that you're trying to. And Yosef just says, no, I'm not going there. Can't do that. That would be a sin to my master. It would be a sin to my God. You ever hear a Maimar Chazal that he saw his father's face? So what's the Shevach? I don't get to see my father's face when I... Oh, yes, you do. It wasn't a miraculous picture of his father that just came to him on the screen. No. It said Yosef knew when to conjure, if you will, the right vision before him to keep him from doing the wrong thing. You see, Yosef, when living at home and is spoiled and is tendered by his father, he doesn't amount to anything. He only begins to become Yosef, just like his father begins to become Israel, only after leaving that, the safety of the house. Right? We discussed the numbers 11 and 28 last class, 11 and 13 last class, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Right? That this is proof. Those numbers are proof that Yosef's dreams were prophetic. I'm adding to that I believe Yosef felt they were. That's why he had to tell them over. The last words of the Haftorah from Parshas Vayeshev is Hashem Dibir Milo Yinovei. If God speaks, you have to speak it. You can't hold on to a prophecy. You have to speak it. He's 17 at this time, right? He's 30 when he interprets Paro's dream, which is 2 years after he interprets the Saramashi. Right? His dreams, and the first dream is 11 Right? 11 bundles bowing down to his bundle. And then, to the second dream, it's 13 heavenly bodies bowing down to him. That second dream is chutzpah. That's why he spent 2 more years in jail. The 11 bundles are 11 years, just like all those other dreams in Bereishis, where numbers refer to time. Right? Three baskets of 3 days. Three clusters of 3 days for the butler and the baker. Seven cows, seven sheaves are 7 years. Right? And in Yosef's dreams, the 11 and the 13 are also time periods. If the 11 years, the first dream is legitimate, it's true. The brothers did bow down to him. But to dream about your father and your mother, who's not even alive anymore, that means that he's going beyond. He's going beyond prophecy. He's getting into shus. Every dream has a little shus. Yaakov tried to deflect the hatred by saying, Yosef, if you think your mother and I are just like that shus, that rest of it is shus. Yes.
So the 11 corresponded to the 11 years you've been.
11 years from the time of the dream to the time when he's going to become great.
And what's the 13?
The 13 is when he actually did become great. There are different opinions of why he had to spend two more years in jail. Right? So one Rashi brings that he asked twice of the baker, the butler, to remember him. But here, but when you add this 11th Cheshvan and 13th Cheshvan, it shows that there's prophecy in this too. Look, the dream of the butler and the baker has a degree of prophecy. The dream of power has a degree of prophecy. It's fully prophecy. So here is what I'd like to do with these three items. Bereishis is in dire need of tikkun. Right? Bereishis is in great need of tikkun right now. What's the great tikkun? I mean, there's a lot of trends happening. Women are barren. Right? A lot of rootlessness and traveling and exiles and famines and a lot of trends, but the most prevailing and pervading trend in Sefer Bereishis starts with Cain and Hevel and is mainly
simply.
And what do they all seem to share in common is that
parents kind of feel
the
older one is always the one that's set aside and doesn't take kindly to it. Who is this kid taking my parents' love away from me, and now he takes my God's love away from me? If he wasn't here, God would have accepted my karma. Right? Any of you are old, firstborn, right? So good parenting either presents, if you may be the only one in the child, in the family, then it's, of course it's not child, but... And you may have one other sibling, or you may have 8 other siblings. But good parenting teaches the oldest one that this new arrival in the family is good for you. Making a party for you too. You're going to love this new arrival. Yes, we're not going to be able to spend as much time with you as we did before, but it's still going to be good for you. I have to share a room with that? Right? So, look, they're different. I know in the secular world, they say what's the optimum age to have the second child is when the oldest is 5. Right? Don't have a second child until he's 5, because he's younger than that. He's not old enough to appreciate that what this new one is about. Right? And so it appears in books on siblings. Right? Yeah, if you have families where they... In America, 2 children is much more than the norm. Some countries in Europe, it's 1.1, 1.3. That's death knell for societies. So in Italy, Ireland, these countries are barely past 1. You need 2.1 for a placement. more than 2, 2.1 for a place. Right? So anyway, the point is that if you're waiting 5 years, you're still going to be with your second more than the average in the Western world today. We're imploding. And the barbarians are just waiting to take over. They're having a lot more children. Even in China now, they're allowed to have more than one now. Anyway, I get back to our point here, is that this is the prevailing problem of Sefer Bereishis. By the time you get up to chapter 38, including the sale of Yosef, I mean, this is going to be the story of man. Zed told us, Zed Sefer told us, Adam. We know that we, by the time we get to the Torah and we read these stories, we're a nation now. How can the nation get off to a good start if, for goodness sakes, the family can't work? There's no family that's functions yet. Right? And in this generation, it's as bad as it gets. I know Cain killed his brother, but maybe he didn't know what he was doing. This is as bad as it gets. And I submit to you, it has to reach a low point. The low point is definitely Mechiras Yosef. According to the Meshech Chochma, we have to atone not only for the Egel every Yom Kippur, we have to atone for Mechiras Yosef on every Yom Kippur. Can you think of where in the liturgy we do that?
The martyrs.
Yeah, the martyrs, which begins with a Roman Russia, a Roman king, saying, "No, what's the punishment for selling to someone in the state?" Oh, Misa, it says in Parshas Mishpatim. Yeah, well, when did you ever atone for the brother's son in Yosef? Now, they could have given it. There's probably a good answer for that question. The answer I would tell you is the brothers never sold Yosef. They didn't. We can look inside and see it now. The brothers did not sell Yosef. They may have been responsible for selling Yosef, right? When he identifies himself to them, he says, "I am Yosef, the one you sold to the Egyptians." Right? I'm going to prove to you in 10 minutes the brothers did not sell him. You are now rendering a Targum Yonas, he says that, based on the Haftorah. It begins with the words Al Mikhram Ba Kesef Tzadik Ve'evyon Ba'avur Na'alani. But even Rashi on that pasuk in Amos, which is definitely the source of what you just said, says that that's talking about the horrible practice at that time of selling people into slavery because they can't pay back a debt on a pair of shoes. Get Al Mikhram Ba Kesef Tzadik Ve'evyon Ba'avur Na'alani. It's not referring to that. That's that pasuk is reading that Yosef Hatzad. But it's not talking about Yosef and the Pshat. Right. Question?
So is this like trend of brothers fighting kind of broken up by Ephraim and Menashe? Is that why we do it?
Yes, but you're 3 classes ahead.
Okay.
Yes. Ephraim and Menashe fixed Bereishis so that the next two brothers, where the trend continues, can work together. Get it? Moshe objects at the snap 5 times, and he only agrees to go when God tells him, "Your brother is happy for you." That's really Moshe's apprehension. God, how can I? You know, come on, my brother's been there all this time, and I'm coming to Johnny come lately, and I'm stealing his thunder. Your brother's happy for you. And that's because I'll say it, he's with the potion, right over his heart. Okay, so you jumped the gun here, Aiden, but everyone, keep that in the back of your head. Yes, David.
I have a separate question. Even if you say, I think we're referring to Ishmael and took Yosef out of the pit, were the brothers still present?
I don't know. It's possible that the whole plan, of, at least for Reuven, was, let's put them in the pit. There's no food there. There's no water there. He's going to die. And our hand won't be on it. The brothers wanted to kill him right there. Mm-hmm. Let's kill him right. Let's cut his throat now. No. We can't do that. That's too much. The sons of Yaakov, the Sherez Yisrael, Lo Yasu, Avla. Let's just let the elements kill him, right? And then Reuven would come back later to take him home and get credit. Reuven's a bad way. He just did the terrible thing with Bilhah, and he's in a bad spot with his father, right? So this will get me in a good spot. I'll get my father's good side.
So doing this, I have some atonement to do. So Reuven's hoping that, but in between, you're probably reading it in the pasuk. It says that Yishma'elim came down from where they sold him to Pharaoh, and they took him out of the pit. They sold him to the Midianites. The Midianites sold him to the Egyptians. So nowhere are the brothers in that chedron. So why didn't those rabbis tell that to Hadrian, who said, "I need 10 rabbis to kill"? Your response is, by the way. The answer is, listen, I don't need to bust any bubbles about this story that you read on Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. It's not a single historical event. The 10 rabbis who were killed in that story, right? You with me? Lived 100 to 150 years apart from each other. You hear me? Right. What it was is all 10 were definitely martyred. They're all told in different stories in the Talmud. But when the rabbis looked over, how could this be? How could such terrible, awful things happen? Must be an atonement from the Chiddush Yosef. So on Tisha B'Av, we read it in order for the sadness. On Yom Kippur, we read it for atonement. Kippur is supposed to be a happy day. In Kippur, we read it for atonement. Get it? Because we were all involved with the Egel, and we were all involved with Mechiras Yosef. So we need to atone for both of them on Yom Kippur. Be'eladam ha'makam, be'eladam ha'chavera. One thing's for sure, we were responsible for Mechiras Yosef. Remember, at the end, he says, "I'm Yosef, the one you sold to Egypt." How could Rosh Hashanah say that you did the Midianites, that you smiled and sold? Because I'm Yosef, the one you were responsible for selling. Okay, you good?
So I would like to suggest to you today that the beginning of the Tikkun takes place even before Mechiras Yosef. What? I just said that Mechiras Yosef is the low point.
The Tikkun is taking place in the middle of Mechiras Yosef. I know that's cryptic. Look for it. Perek Lamed Zayin, it appears, right, with two brothers. These two brothers are going to interact throughout the story. They're Reuven and Yehuda. Reuven should be the natural leader. He's the oldest one. They're not so old. The old Reuven is maybe 26, 27 now. Right? Yosef is 17. Maybe Reuven's even younger than that. Right?
But I'll give it. Maybe they're older. Remember, you started having children very young back then. Not Yaakov. Yaakov was in his 80s when he starts to have children, but because the next story, Yehuda has children old enough to get married, right? So, but Reuven says, "Let us not kill him. Let the pit kill him. You're probably snakes, scorpions, and other things in there. Let him die on his own. Let us not kill him." Right? Okay. Now, the text tells us that Reuven wanted to take him home. You're aware of that, right? It gives him the credit of the reader knows that Reuven's intention is not for him to die in that pit, but to somehow get him home. So why didn't he just say that? Explain it.
He didn't want the brothers to die.
He didn't think he could convince the brothers of that. So he devised a plan whereby we throw him in the pit. The guys will go away. We'll all go away for a little bit. I'll come back and grab him and take him home. he came back to the pit, he's not there. Now, when they saw the Ishmaelim come, right? Yehuda steps in. Right? Vayom Yehuda el Achav, I'm reading Pasuk Tesva, Achavah. There's no gain in killing him. By saying that, what do you get from this? They still want to kill him. I don't want to go home with him possibly just sitting there. I want to make sure he's dead. We don't want him ever messing up our lives anymore. So with Yehuda is more convincing than Reuven. He said, he's trying to think, what's going to work? Because evidently they still want to kill him. So someone's got to step in and say something that's going to save his life, because the majority of the people here want to kill him. Evidently Reuven is not there at this time. Right? Because Reuven would not allow him to be sold. Do everybody agree with that? Reuven wants to bring him home. Reuven would have stepped in or something, but Reuven's not there at this moment. So Yehuda says, what personal gain would we have in killing him? And I submit to you in this Pasuk, Chavav is the beginning of the Tikkun. Look at it and tell me. Guys, if you're not looking at Pasuk Chavav, how are you going to get this? Ma betza ki narog es ochinu. I submit to you that's the beginning of the tikkun. Because the Pasuk should just say, Ma betza ki narog oso. V'chisinu es domo, and if we cover his blood. L'chubanim karenu li Yishmaelim. Let's go sell him, like a Lashon Zrizus. Let's go sell him to the Yishmaelim. The Yodenu al Tihibo. Let not our hands be on him. Ki ochinu bisarenu hu. He is our blood. He's our flesh. He's our brother. You get it? Reuven, you can might argue that the tikkun starts to come when the brothers stand up for Dina. Yeah, but that's not. Dina's no threat to anybody. Right? Yehuda uses the word achinu twice in this statement. And as such, he convinces them. No one pushed back on that. Then it says, he says, that's down to Yishmaelim, but then Vayavru Anashim Midyonim. Then the Midyonim came before the Yishmaelim got in, and they pulled him out of the pit. Pasuk Chof Ches really says it very clearly. The Midyonim took him out of the pit and sold him to the Yishmaelim for 20 kesef. In the end, the brothers didn't even get any money at all for him. The Midianites took him. They didn't pay for him. The Midianites took him and got 20 shekel from the Yishmaelim. I don't know, first they said, look, there come Yishmaelim. Well, what were they? Yishmaelim and Midianim. So Rashbam says, Ibn Ezra says, Yishmaelim and Midianim are interchangeable.
They said that they sold the
Midianim took him out,
sold him
to the Ishmaelim for 20 kesef.
It happened to be interchangeable.
According to Ibn Ezra, the brothers sold him to the Ishmaelim, who are also called Midianim. It's a little strange. It brings some very interesting proofs to this. They're both sons of Abraham. And there are other stories in Tanakh where the whole story is about Midianim, and all of a sudden they say this is Ishmaelim. I don't like that answer either. It's ironic that what saved Yosef's life is that Yehuda was able to convince them to gain something. You're not going to gain anything if you just kill him. We could go home with some money for this. And they never even had a chance to do it before the Midianim came.
So is there another explanation for Midian and
Ishmaelim? So Rashbam says that they were mistaken. They thought they were Ishmaelim because they had camels. Midianites had camels, not Ishmaelim. They were mistaken. They thought they were Ishmaelim. Sorry, Ishmaelim are the ones with camels, not Midianim. They thought they were Ishmaelim. But they were wrong. They were really Midianim. Okay. By the way, to make matters even more complicated, look at the last pasuk in Perek Lamed Zion for who actually sold him to the Egyptians. Read it carefully.
It says now the Midianites sold him to Egypt.
Who?
The Midianites.
Say it again.
Midianim.
That's not a mistake. Avram had three children: Midian, Midan, and Yishmael, and some others. But Midan and Midian were two separate sons of Avraham, and they were two separate clans: Midanim and not Midianim. So this Rashi just—I think Rashi gets it least complicated and says he was sold numerous times. One to the other. If you pasim, you have to say Potiphar, Socharim, Yishmaelim, Midianim, or Midanim. I don't know. It's confusing. It's confounding.
And with this, I mean, they call the multiple Jews are called them Jews. Yehudim, but this also encompasses the other tribes.
I think that you're correct. In later in Tanakh, all of these nations are known as Hagrim. You know what that's from?
No.
Try to get it. Hagar. Descendants of Hagar. Hagrim. Look at Tehillim Pei Gimel, and Hagrim are mentioned quite often in Divrei Hayamim. Sometimes Hagriim, sometimes Hagrim. The Hagarites, meaning the Bedouins and others like that. Okay, let's not get bogged down with that right too much, because I want to do try to show that Yehuda, by saying let's not cover the blood of our brother. After all, he's our flesh. That means that for the first time, someone is actually mentioning the idea that you should be kind to a brother in this book, right? And then in the very next story, it really comes out. Because Yehuda has two sons, right, who are both married in quick succession to the same woman. You familiar with this story? The halacha is like some kind of quasi-yibum. Your brother died without a child, take his wife, name a child, give him something. Now, very often, it's a halacha that when a woman remarries, no matter how much she loved her first husband who died, if she was divorced, she doesn't care about him. She's not related to him in any way. But if her husband died, she remarries, she's not allowed to light a yahrzeit candle for him. Halacha says she shouldn't visit the grave. You're married to someone else now. Right? She can say, yeah, but I'd much rather be married to my first husband. I know, but that's not happening. If you want to remarry, you're married to the second husband now. Where you want to be buried, you'll let your children or put it in the note what you want. But while you're married to this man, You can't pine for the first husband. It's not going to be good for you or him. A man who marries a woman who statistics show that when someone is married to someone who died, if it was a good marriage, then they move on. Not so quickly. The halacha says a certain amount of time to wait, but they're able to move on. Right? The thought of her dead husband is the first thing she thinks of in her mind when she wakes up in the morning, until it's the second thing she thinks of in the mind, or the third thing, and then she's ready to move on. Right? But there's one man on earth who is okay with her even naming a child after that husband. Why? Because it's my brother. And I can live with the fact that she may prefer to be married to someone else. I miss him too. It's an amazing thing. The Torah commands the brother, but it does give the brother a way out, called chalitza. And even by the time of the Mishnah in Bechoro says, mitzvahs chalitza kodemes. Because the men, they knew it was not an easy thing to do. Right? But you still think that she does need one or the other to move on. That there's some recognition that the man died without a child. Right? Yehuda's command to his son to do this. You know the flavor of it. It's a mitzvah at the end of Parshas Kisetze, right? I'm in Bereishis Lamed Ches, and it says,
which
this is Lamed Ches Ches 38:8.
Anybody get there?
Okay. So he tells his son Onan, "Bo el eishes achicha, v'yabeim osa." He's telling him, "Now, right, sleep with your sister-in-law and have a child with her." Okay. V'yabeim, look at that. So early in Tanakh, the mitzvah Hebrew. V'hokein zera le'ochicha. He's going a little too far with this, right? Establish a zera for your brother. Okay? But Onan is behaving like every other brother in this book. He hasn't yet been taught to be a good brother. Now, if he refuses on sight, so okay, that's the same as chalitza. But what he does is he wants the girl, he marries her, but he realizes, well, she's going to call his name and always think about my older brother heir, you all know what he did. What's interesting is look at the verb. The next pasuk uses for what he did with his seed after starting the act of procreation. Vayeda onan ki lo yihye hazera. Yeda, which is a terminology the Torah has already used for that sexual act, right? Vayeda ha'adam es chava isha. Right? Onan knew that the zera would not be his. What does that mean? Of course it's yours. It's your child. Right? So what did he do? Here's the verb. V'shiches arisa. The Viltina son zera l'achiv.
Destroyed.
Of course, if the zera goes on the floor, I can't be pregnant anymore, but... it's very strange to use such a word. I would expect it, but give me some better Hebrew words to use here. It would have to be a Hifil word. Hipil arza. Shofach arza. He spilled it. That's usually how it's translated. He spilled the seed on the ground. Isn't that usually what we say? Right? Let's say he destroyed, she hates us. I think that the author of Rus is aware of this verb when he writes. Can you think where I'm talking about? Anyone know Rus well enough to know what was Pliny Almoni's response when he was told to marry Rus and to perpetuate the name of her dead husband? What did he say? I can't. Lo uchal ligol pen ashkis esnachalosi. If I marry her, I will destroy my future. She's a Moabite. I'm not marrying a Moabite. Torah says you're not allowed to marry Moabites. Same verb, you see? A refusal to perpetuate the name of a close, in the case of Yehuda, a brother, here it's a close relative. This one's after Matan Torah. It shows that there's an element of perpetuating the name even if you're not the brother. Right? You see, you can't marry your brother's widow if your brother had children. You could marry your cousin's widow. Okay, I mean, Pliny Almoni and Machlon were cousins. You can marry your second cousin's widow, and there's another no, even if she, you can marry your cousin's widow, even if she, if your cousin died with children. You just can't marry your brother's widow if he died with children. Marriage to your brother's wife is chayv kares outside of the mitzvah of Yibum. Tells his son. He says to his son, look, does he see it inside? Bo el Ashes Ochicha, the Abemos son, the Hakim Zera le Ochicha. You get it? Just like he did with by Yosef, he uses the word brother twice. He didn't say his name, he says, go to your brother's wife. Establish a memory for your brother. Someone's trying to teach someone how to be a good brother. Which is, no one's done that yet. So Yehuda is going to be at the forefront of fixing this book. Right? The Lions gave it away because it's really Ephraim and Menashe, but Yehuda starts first by putting himself instead of Binyamin. We're going to have to figure out how Yaakov comes out in all of this. Isn't his behavior with Binyamin in Parshas Miketz just perpetuating the same problem? You can all starve. I'm not making this up, of course. You can all starve. I'm not sending Binyamin up to Egypt. Binyamin himself has 10 sons by that time. Yaakov just says, listen, I'm not sending Binyamin. Nope. In fairness, back to Yaakov, remember, Binyamin's mother died while they were in transit, Parshas Vayishlach. As far as Yaakov knows, Binyamin's brother died while in transit in Parshas Vayeshev. I'm not letting Binyamin die in transit in Parshas Miketz. There is a karma in this family, and I'm not letting it go. He's in much greater danger than the rest of you if I let him go. Okay? So, at this point, it's Yehuda who tries to teach at least some semblance of doing something for a brother. Right? tell you, Rashi, I'm giving you Rashi, I'm going to give you other proportion. After Mechiras Yosef, it says Yehuda left his brothers and married and got married a daughter of Canaanite, and he had two sons, and he gave the older one, married Tamar, and then he died because he was bad, and then he told his second son, marry your brother's wife, and have a child with her, and he didn't want to, and he spilled the seed on the ground, and then he had a third child, and he said to the woman, wait till he gets older, he's old enough to marry you, and then when she saw that he wasn't being given to her, she had to do something to get back into the family. She may believe she was a prostitute, and Yehuda impregnated her with twins. You get it? To make up for the two boys who died. Guys, how many years does that have to take? I mean, even if you're having children at 12, 13, which is possible, but no matter how you look at that, for goodness sakes, between Mechiras Yosef and the time they arrive in Egypt is, I wrote it on the board today, 13 years. Right? Now, it could be it's more than it's going to be 20 years because there's 7 years of plenty. They didn't go until it was into the years of the famine. So it's okay, 20 years. Is that enough time for all this to happen? Right? For Yehuda to get married, which could have happened, taken place the next day, fine. And have sons old enough where you have two sons, older sons, younger sons, it's not given to. So that's why Rashi says that Yehuda left his brothers because they blamed him for Mechiras Yosef. And he said, me? You guys wanted to kill him. Why are you blaming me? Answer that. What did they say? We would have listened to you. They didn't listen to me, but we would have listened to you. So you are at fault, so he left him. So I can't put up with this anymore. I'm out of here. Ibn Ezra claims that the story of Perek Lamed Ches actually happened when they were younger. Right? Ibn Ezra claims that Lamed Ches is out of its place. Lamed Ches is after Lamed Vav, it's before Mechiras Yosef. Why it's put there, I look at Ramban, who disagrees, and okay. I'm just, but it's not important for my the point I'm trying to make here, which is that the brothers have some atonement to do. And here's the real upshot of how to learn the rest of Bereishis. Yosef has to have some atonement too. Okay. Have you ever heard of three different opinions? I'll just leave you with this today. Three different opinions of what his bad reports were.
He's under immoral, it's like the woman.
They're abusing... The four, you know, Don Naftali, God, and Asher, right? Abusing Shvachos. You hear this one? They're eating Eva min Achai? It's crazy. What is that? So they make sense of all this. And that they are. Yes?
What is Eva min Achai?
They're eating meat before the animal dies. They're lopping off limbs from an animal before it dies. Oh, and Gilead Arias. They're sleeping around. Cool. They're just sleeping around with all the Canaanite women in the group. Alright? These are the three things he's. Alright? So, this is the beauty of the rest of Sefer Bereishis. Because, look, the Tanakh is profound failures of mankind. I mean, we're messing up wherever we go. It's all about the redemption. It's all about who's going to learn. Shaul doesn't learn, so small sins take it down. David learns, so big sins get atoned. All right? We're going to continue with this Mitzvah Shem next class. Okay, I have Genesis 3 here for you. Take one. It'll be due right before the Pesach recess.